Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 40 degrees and wet this morning. It's Thursday, December 8th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Day two of a military Article 32 hearing gets underway today in Juneau for Lieutenant Lance Leone, a Coast Guard officer at Air Station Sitka who is facing charges related to a helicopter crash off the coast of Washington State last year. As Matt Miller reports, those who investigated the flight of Coast Guard 6017 said yesterday that the crash's only survivor shirked his duties as co-pilot of the aircraft. His defense says, not true.
Lieutenant Lance Leone was the co-pilot of a Coast Guard H-60 helicopter that was being flown from Astoria, Oregon, to its new assigned station in Sitka in July of last year. It crashed after striking power lines near La Push, Washington. Leone was the only survivor. Lieutenant Sean Kruger, the pilot, and aviation maintenance technicians Adam Hoke and Brett Banks were killed. Leone is being charged with dereliction of duty under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Specifically, it's alleged that he failed to navigate the helicopter to avoid hazards, and he allowed a flight under 500 feet altitude in a national wildlife refuge. He's being charged, through his alleged neglect, with destruction of $18.3 million of government property. He's also being charged with causing the deaths of Hoke and Banks, but not Kruger. Wednesday, a civilian helicopter pilot from Seattle, airshow organizer and writer for Helicopter Magazine's Jennifer Boyer said she witnessed an H-60 flying near Long Beach, Washington that same day in July of last year, believed to be Lieutenant Leone's aircraft, and testified that it appeared to be flying less than 150 feet off the ground and as fast as 150 knots on the day of the crash. But under cross-examination, she admitted that she had sent an email to a Coast Guard officer days after the crash that indicated the chopper wasn't flying quite that low and quite that fast. Captain Timothy Heitch was part of a three-officer Coast Guard team that investigated the crash. According to him, the chopper was traveling at an altitude of 200 feet and nearly 125 knots for most of the flight. An Article 32 hearing is much like a grand jury proceeding or a preliminary hearing in civilian criminal court, but unlike a grand jury, proceedings are open to the public and the accused counsel has the ability to cross-examine witnesses. Lieutenant Leone is flanked in the courtroom by his Navy and Coast Guard legal counsel and John M. Smith, an Army veteran who has a civilian law practice in Arlington, Virginia. On the other side, two other Coast Guard officers are presenting the government's case. In the back of the high-ceiling courtroom, gallery benches are partially filled with observers, including Leone's wife and brother-in-law, father, stepmother, friends from Sitka, and other Coast Guard's men and women who knew or served with him. Kyler Kruger, widow of pilot Sean, has flown up from Florida to attend the hearing and provide some moral support for Leone. At times, he looked slightly uneasy and somber, but lightened up when embraced by family and friends or chatted with him during breaks in the hearing. On the advice of his defense attorney, he's not talking to the media, but his family and friends are, and they all say that Lieutenant Leone is a good, honest man. As the only survivor of the crash, they feel that he's being made an example of and singled out as a possible scapegoat by Coast Guard Command in a show that the service is serious about safety. After lunchtime review of the cockpit voice recorder behind closed doors, Captain Timothy Heitch testified afterwards that an automated audible altitude alarm, heard only by the pilots, went off when the helicopter descended below 200 feet during the flight. He also said the helicopter was traveling at an altitude of 114 feet and a speed of 110 knots moments before the crash. In his words, it then struck the wires and was torn apart by dynamic forces. Attorney John Smith referred to the voice recorder's transcript as he continued questioning Captain Heitch, sometimes in the form of leading questions, to get him to admit that, yes, Lieutenant Leone did communicate with Lieutenant Kruger. He told him about navigational hazards, such as the nearby Eagle or fixed-wing aircraft. He gave proper notice when his eyes were down in the instruments or when various equipment malfunctions were detected. That may be meant to refute the allegation that Lieutenant Leone was negligent in his duty as safety pilot and co-pilot of the aircraft. Lieutenant Leone was considered more experienced in flying a newer model of the H-60, but Lieutenant Kruger was the more experienced Alaskan pilot and pilot in command in the right seat, whose hands were almost exclusively on the controls during that flight. And Smith pointed out that it was Lieutenant Kruger who announced couplers off, meaning that a rudimentary equivalent of an autopilot was disengaged as Lieutenant Kruger brought the aircraft down to 115 feet 40 seconds before the crash. Testimony has not yet touched on the visibility of the wires and how they were allegedly improperly marked as hazards to aircraft. That may come later. With a dozen people on the witness list, proceedings are now expected to last into Friday before the hearings investigating officer, Coast Guard Captain Andrew Norris of the Naval War College, drafts a set of recommendations. Best analogy, perhaps, is that he's the equivalent of a grand jury panel in civilian court. He'll have 7 days to suggest dismissal of the charges, administrative or internal discipline, or a court-martial. Those recommendations will be forwarded on to Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, head of the 17th Coast Guard District in Alaska, but he's not obligated to follow those recommendations. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Two proposals to establish subsistence-only zones for herring in Sitka Sound failed to win recommendation from the Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Committee in a contentious meeting Tuesday night. Subsistence harvesters say the commercial seine fishery is having a negative effect on their ability to gather herring eggs on hemlock branches, which is a traditional food for Southeast natives. Every 3 years, the State Board of Fish reviews how herring are managed. When the board meets in February, it will consider some proposals designed to address the conflict between subsistence users and seiners and find some compromise. But if testimony at Tuesday night's meeting of the Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Committee is any indication, compromise will not be easy. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The two proposals before the Board of Fish seek to establish subsistence-only zones for herring in Sitka Sound. The zones encompass an area along Sitka's road system from just south of O'Connell Bridge all the way up to the Gavansky Islands. The Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery is one of the most competitive and expensive commercial fisheries in the state. About 50 seine boats fish it, and the average permit is worth more than $500,000. Openings are fast and furious, with boats scrambling to seine as many herring as possible in a short amount of time and over a relatively small area. Steve Reifenstuhl represents the Southeast Herring Conservation Alliance, which is made up mostly of commercial fishermen. He says the proposals to develop subsistence-only zones are not based on good science or math.
So what this is really about is chipping away at the edges, and it's not necessary to do. I think that, again, the department has demonstrated a good faith effort in prosecuting this fishery, and I think that subsistence needs have been met and will be met.
Subsistence harvesters like Tom Gamble disagree.
You get your quota. But we've shown again on record that there were at least three times in our books within the last 5 to 6 years where we did not meet our needs.
Subsistence harvesters fell short of a yearly number called the amount necessary for subsistence in 2005, 2007, and 2008. The area that would be subsistence only under the proposals includes waters that have provided herring openings for the commercial fleet. Fish and Game commercial fisheries biologist Dave Gordon says if the zones were in place, there could be some years where meeting the GHL, or guideline harvest level, of herring would be a challenge. But Gamble, the subsistence harvester, says the zone is a small area compared to where the commercial fleet can find herring.
And we're not asking for you guys to close down your entire fishery forever and ever. We're not saying that the GHL has to be amended, or the process that you use in determining your GHL needs to be amended. We're asking for a very small portion.
Those weren't the only issues during Tuesday night's discussion. There were also disagreements over broader issues, like the intersection of traditional knowledge and government science. And there were calls for compromise. One of those calls came from George Bennett. He stood up at the back of the room and said a lot of subsistence harvesters, like him, also have been commercial fishermen and are not unsympathetic to the needs of the industry.
We know when it was good, and it's not that good now. And these guys have to fight for every place they need to make money and live. And we know that. But somewhere along the line, there has to be a compromise.
To do otherwise, Bennett said, will just mean angrier discussions in the future and more disagreement. At one point, advisory committee member Jack Lorigan asked point blank if there was room to budge.
If I was to ask the industry right now, without the benefit of talking to all 52 seiners, is there an area in there that you'd be willing to talk about?
People in the audience looked at one another, not saying anything, until Saner Mitch Ide broke the silence.
On my part, I'd have to say no, because I'm not convinced there's any correlation between us being there and not being there. There's the numbers, I'm not even going to call it data, that they put up there. It looked to me like there was one year where it could have been an effect, one year where it definitely wasn't, and then another year where it was kind of questionable. We didn't catch a lot of fish there. Wasn't a big subsistence year. I don't see the evidence to justify closing that area to commercial fishing.
The same question later was put to Harvey Kitka, chairman of the Sitka Tribe of Alaska's Herring Committee. Is there room for compromise?
Not a whole lot. I think there might be, but I really think we've compromised far beyond what we could have already.
After the subsistence-only zones failed to win recommendation from the advisory committee, a motion was made to encourage both sides to continue working toward consensus. The advisory committee's recommendations are just that. The Board of Fish will consider them, but ultimately is free to do whatever it wants when it meets in February. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Washington State has the second most teachers in the nation who earned national board certification this year. Those 945 teachers join more than 6,000 others in Washington State who now earn a $5,000 bonus each year for proving they are accomplished in their work. The governor and the head of the state education department commended the teachers for earning the certification. The president of the state's largest teachers union is encouraging the legislature to reject proposals to cut the bonus system for this program. For the first time this year, bonuses in the first year will be prorated according to the date of certification. Zone weather today for Sitka, PA, calls for rain, highs around 44, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. This is Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.